Welcome to EKU Podcasts from the RCGP. My name is Dr. Thomas Round, and today I'm talking to Dr. Sally Higginbottom, who's a GP in Camden and one of our experienced EKU authors. Hi, Sally.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about depression in children and young people, the EKU 13 module, which is based on evidence-based update from NICE last year in 2013. Sally, can you give a bit of overview of this guideline and module?
Yeah, so this was the NICE authors going back to look at any new data, new studies that have been published since the 2005 guideline on detection and treatment of depression in children and young people. So this doesn't change the original NICE guidance, but it highlights any new and interesting articles which they think will inform the guidance and how we are applying it now. So they looked at, I think, about 3,000 studies and identified 8 which fulfilled all their criteria that they then summarised in detail for this update.
So we probably can go into some of the evidence-based reviews and guidance in a bit, but maybe we should go back to consider about how GPs should maybe assess a child or a young person who potentially is coming in with low mood, or that they may not even present with that. What sort of techniques would you use, or assessment that you would do initially?
Well, the advice is to use the ICD-10 diagnostic criteria, where you're looking for the 3 key symptoms of sort of depressed mood, lack of interest and enjoyment, and reduced energy are your sort of 3 your key symptoms. And then they advise looking for associated symptoms such as difficulty with concentration, reduced self-esteem, ideas of guilt or bleak views of the future, and obviously ideas of self-harm, and then the physical symptoms of disturbed sleep and a reduction in appetite. And what you're doing is, obviously, people may or may not, as with adults, come in and complain specifically of those symptoms. So you may need to ask more directly about those specific symptoms. The thing that I found most helpful looking at the diagnostic criteria was when you're wondering whether someone has a mild depression that might need some watchful waiting or management in primary care or in school, or a more moderate or severe depression, the distinguishing factor is really about function. So someone who is functioning reasonably well at school and at home is in the mild category. Someone who is not functioning will either have moderate or severe depression. I found that a really helpful cutoff point for my own learning.
Potentially, you might also get collateral history in children who are coming in, maybe from young people, maybe from the parents or the school.
Absolutely. So, if obviously considering appropriate consent for gathering further information, particularly for the older young people, but certainly if they're happy for you to speak to a parent or a sibling, that would be a great help. In my personal practice, I found schools to be variable but often incredibly helpful. If you can get the right person on the end of the phone to tell you how someone is functioning in school, that's really very helpful diagnostically. But also often schools have access to counselling services or other sorts of psychology-led services within the school, which is often a really useful resource as well.
Potentially, if you thought the child was more of the mild spectrum, would you potentially watch and wait in primary care, or would you refer? What kind of things would trigger you to consider referral?
If you think someone has a mild depression, then the standard advice is for watchful waiting for about 4 weeks, as often these symptoms are quite transient and situational and will improve with minor changes such as a change of form group at school or some changes at home. Obviously, if there are any risk factors, so someone who's having suicidal thoughts, who is having self-harming behaviour, or some comorbid disorders, which are very common in this age group, so either conduct disorder or anxiety disorders or OCD-type problems, then you're wanting to step this up probably quite quickly into secondary care, and probably a lot earlier for children and young people than you would for adults, because actually most adult depression, certainly mild depression and most moderate adult depression, we tend to manage in primary care, whereas in children and young people, I think there's an emphasis on getting specialist care faster because of the long-term effect of depression in this age group.
And the long-term effects of depression can be depression into adulthood.
Proportions of 20 or 30% of these young people will go on to have symptoms for 2 or more years. And if that's 2 or more years of your teenage life or your childhood, that has huge implications for your social functioning and your school function, which then have big knock-on effects into young adult and adult life. There's a sense that these are the people we want to detect and treat early. Perhaps an analogy might be how we see postnatal depression, in that this is depression, but we have a particular focus on trying to get effective treatment early to prevent long-term problems.
Now going into the guideline in a bit more detail, can you give us a brief overview of some of the recommendations from the evidence-based review?
Yeah, so they found some quite interesting data, and one of the more interesting studies was where they had a look at whether the two key treatments which we use in children and young people are CBT and fluoxetine. So what they were looking at is whether there were any indicators as to which children might do better with one or the other or both. And the subgroup analysis was extensive and quite complex, but they certainly found that for children who have high levels of parental discord, that had quite a big effect on the effectiveness of all the treatments, but particularly CBT was not so effective. Similarly, children who were highly oppositional, who didn't like to do as they were told, also did badly with CBT alone, which you can kind of understand on a sort of simplistic level, and that children who don't like listening or being told what to do are going to find it quite difficult possibly to engage with a CBT-style programme. So when they looked at it, there were so many different effects of all the things they measured that the only real conclusion was that it wasn't clear which treatments were best for which children, except that probably combination treatment was the way forward. So that's a combined treatment of both fluoxetine and CBT, and that was very much in keeping with the original NICE, the 2005 NICE guidance. It wasn't a change in their advice, but just a reiteration that probably that is where we should be aiming. A mixture of fluoxetine and CBT is the best we've got currently. But just to be absolutely clear, fluoxetine should only be prescribed in secondary care in the UK. The NICE are very clear that this is not a primary care initiated drug in children and young people because of the risks of suicidality and impulsivity. So our job is to detect and refer early so that when appropriate, the prescribing can be carried out either completely in secondary care or as advised by secondary care with a sort of shared care agreement in place.
And as you say, it would be the moderate to severe end that would benefit most from the fluoxetine and the CBT.
Yes, absolutely. I think the CBT appears to be helpful, but the effect sizes for both treatments versus placebo are not all that impressive. And that's partly, I think, the studies are relatively small because it's very difficult to do studies in this age group in any area, but particularly in mental health.
And is there any different ways of delivery of the CBT that might make a difference?
Yeah, there are two different things that the update found more evidence on. One was the use of a computer program called Sparks. It was a non-inferiority study, so it showed it was not inferior to ordinary CBT, which was potentially very useful because obviously a computer program is highly scalable and relatively cheap to deliver and a form of interaction which a lot of young people are very comfortable with. So that's something to watch for now. I think the NICE guidance isn't that we suddenly all start using computerised CBT, but this may be something to watch. The other area they looked at was classroom-delivered CBT, which was whole-class teaching in the children's usual school, trying to see whether if we try to prevent depression essentially by doing a lot of psychoeducation to the whole class, whether that would be helpful. That was quite an interesting study because what they found was pretty much the opposite, that if you educated children in depressive symptoms and how to get treatment, that what happened was more children reported depressive symptoms. So actually the depressive symptom scores were higher in the children who had experienced the classroom-based CBT than it was in those who had had control interventions. So this was certainly not something to roll out on a large scale at present. But again, it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out, and whether the children were more depressed or whether they were just better able to verbalise their symptoms. I don't think we're quite clear, but that was quite a negative finding.
Very interesting, whether it's uncovering symptoms that children aren't reporting.
Yes, or don't have the vocabulary for. But once you've explained the vocabulary, they can't. So yes, whether this is unmet need or sort of increasing demand, but for no good reason, isn't yet clear. But that again is something to watch for the future.
And to summarise on the antidepressants, the reviews all show that fluoxetine has the most evidence for. Is that correct?
That's right. There was a very helpful Cochrane review which looked at an enormous number of studies, most of which are quite small, but tried to look at all the data about the various antidepressants, because there is a sort of recurrent hope that the more modern antidepressants, things like venlafaxine and escitalopram, may have a better sort of risk benefits profile. But their conclusion is very firmly that the evidence is behind fluoxetine, and so fluoxetine monotherapy remains first choice. Beyond that, obviously, particularly for patients who have a severe depression and maybe those who are inpatients or similar, the psychiatrist will use their judgment as to where they go if fluoxetine is not effective. None of the other drugs came out as anything superior to fluoxetine in the current Cochrane review.
And since doing this EKU module, have you implemented any of this learning and guidelines into your practice?
I think it raised my awareness again to think about depression, particularly as it may present quite atypically. So children who are being brought to us because they're being naughty or difficult, it's made me think again, is this the usual things we think through around autism and ADHD, but actually also whether this is a depression. And that's been quite interesting to just have that on my agenda of things to think about when meeting children. And I think adolescents are quite difficult to assess for depression in general because of the overlap of sort of range of adolescent feelings with sort of range of depressive symptoms. And I think a time course is very helpful there. So to see someone again 2 or 3 times over a few weeks, I think gives you a much clearer idea as to whether there's an underlying depressive illness. And I found that quite helpful to sort of revisit.
And any other issues you feel we haven't covered?
The thing I would mention is the comorbidities, that depressed children and young people have comorbid other psychiatric and psychological conditions to contend with. And so that's one of the reasons why we really need some secondary care input much earlier than with adults, where it's more commonly an isolated illness. Because if you have a child who has an anxiety disorder, a conduct disorder, and a depressive illness, which would be a very common triad, one of the pieces of evidence in this review said that actually treating all that lot together is much more effective than trying to treat one little bit of that at a time, which would make sense, I think, because obviously each would have an impact on the others in trying to help the child to recover and function well. So I thought that was quite a useful learning point for me as well.
And so to summarise, if unsure, bring the child back, get collateral history. Again, if you are thinking it's potentially a depressive symptoms based on your assessment, maybe refer early for a CAMHS assessment, who can then get treatment, and if necessary, antidepressants for the moderate to severe cases in secondary care.
Absolutely. Refer early, and if you're wrong, then usually that's a better situation, that you've referred and then they say, actually, I think this is all fine, and a few weeks later discharge. I think we need to have a low threshold, as we do for a number of conditions in primary care. Actually, we need to try and pick this up. A few months or a couple of years in their lives of being depressed at that age has a potentially a very big impact on their future function as they go forward in life. So, yeah, I think refer early, you're right.
Great. Thanks very much, Sally. Very interesting to talk to you about this subject.
No problem. Nice to speak to you.
You were listening to Essential Knowledge Updates, or EKU, podcasts from the Royal College of General Practitioners.